This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Before Kinky Boots was a movie, before it was a hit Broadway musical, it was a true story, that of a British man who tries to save a failing shoe business by producing fetish footwear for men. In the show, that man is Charlie, who leaves the family business for a job in London.
Your life, your future is right here at this factory. You belong here.
No, Dad, I belong with Nicola in London.
No, you belong here.
Will you toast my journey?
But to leave your home and family for a job shopping in London?
Marketing, Dad. Richard Bailey has offered Nicola and me positions marketing real estate.
You're breaking my heart, Charlie.
To you, Dad.
Shoes can protect a man's journey, but only his heart can choose the path. And so, a toast to our own Charlie. May you never fail to point your shoes back home.
It isn't long before Charlie does point his shoes home to reluctantly take the reins of his family's failing business. He's plagued with self-doubt, but is saved when he runs into a drag queen named Lola.
No need to be embarrassed. I like being looked at. And you like to look. I know a way to make us both happy.
That's just the beginning of the story, and we spend the rest of the hour exploring it and some of the overtones that we can connect to in Charlotte. In the production of Kinky Boots that opened last night at the Belk, Lola is played by a North Carolina native, J. Harrison G., who is all dressed up for radio. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
It takes a brave man to wear a bow tie.
I do like to consider myself brave.
And for much of the play, his nemesis on the factory floor is Don, a hyper-masculine bear of a factory worker, played by Joe Coots, who you may have seen on Bones or Blue Bloods, White Collar, Royal Pains, 30 Rock. You've been around.
I do whatever they do. I do whatever I can.
Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having us, Mike.
I don't know whether you're aware of this. I guess you are, of how successful this show is. It's pretty much sold out before you opened, and they've already rebooked the show for December. I don't think that's ever happened before in Charlotte, where before a show opens, they decide to bring it back in the same year. Has it happened on the road before, to you?
Pretty much every city.
Really?
Yeah. Vegas was rebooked before we even opened. Same with L.A. Same with San Francisco.
What's going on here?
It's the best show ever, Mike.
What's going on? Kinky Boots is taking over the world. Absolutely.
No, seriously. I mean, there are some really big shows that have been around or that open on Broadway and do good box office. But seriously, if you're being rebooked before you open in lots of cities, there's something happening. There's something different going on.
I think the message that this show carries is reaching the country even before we get there, and people are understanding its relevance right now in the world. So I think that's what's drawing people to what Kinky Boots is bringing.
Mm. I saw this show on opening night in New York, thanks to the Blumenthal. But it was an electric evening that night in the theater. When the show went on to win 6 Tony Awards, as you know, the most for any show that season, including Best Score for Cyndi Lauper's music, Best Choreography, Best Musical, Best Orchestrations, Best Sound Design. This was the first show that Cyndi Lauper ever wrote. She's written a ton of music, but not for a Broadway show. How would you describe what she has given you to sing?
I think it's different than anything else you hear in New York. A lot of shows, they have Broadway genre. They have their own type of, you get Les Mis's and all these other boring shows like that.
Hey.
The classics.
But I think it's different. I think it's, rock, it's blues, it's country, it's pop, it's a little bit R&B.
Yeah.
She goes all over the place.
Yeah, you shouldn't diss Les Mis, because you'd be a good Thénardier.
Yeah. Never.
Why not?
I think Les Mis is the most boringest show of all time.
Really?
Yeah. I love the music. I'm just like, ugh. Come on, get over it.
Really?
Hence why he's in kinky boots.
Yeah, okay. Well, how do you feel about Les Mis, as long as we're talking about Les Mis?
Well, you know, funny enough, I've never actually seen the show.
Really?
I saw the movie, but I was
the movie is not good.
Yes, yes. That's what everyone says.
I'm one of the weird ones that think the movie's better.
Do you really?
Yeah. Mm. Call me crazy, Mike.
I have one question for you, then. Yeah. Why Russell Crowe?
Well, that was a bad choice. Okay. I will not disagree with that one.
That always fascinates me, that when they make movies, or even when they make some Broadway plays, when you know the producers have the access to almost anybody in the world that they could cast, they make these strange decisions that don't work out.
Russell Crowe was so painful to watch, and the reason why is because you could tell he was so nervous about the singing. Yeah. Instead of just telling the story and who cares what the voice sounds like, I don't care what your voice sounds like, tell the story. And he was so painfully nervous that it showed, and I just think it was completely miscast.
And I think that's also a part of why Kinky Boots is so successful, is in Jerry Mitchell's direction of the show, it's all about telling the story. He often directed us that we were in a musical, but we shouldn't act like we were in a musical.
Uh-huh.
It's a story that happens to have music attached to it.
And it's kind of, the choreography for this, which is very athletic and a lot of fun to watch, is also being done by people on a factory floor. So it's kind of the approach I think the choreographer took here, and I'm putting words in his mouth, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is not unlike what Jerome Robbins did in South Pacific, because he said, I got all these Navy Seabees. They don't know how to dance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make them look like they're dancing. I want to make them look like they're being Seabees, but they're dancing.
Exactly.
And that's kind of what this looks like.
Yeah, and in his teaching of the choreography, it was often he would tell us, you're not the Rockettes. It shouldn't be perfect. Mess it up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, take it own it.
Is that hard to do for people who are trained?
Absolutely, to let your guard down and mess up your dance. You're like, wait, what? Okay, not be perfect.
Yeah.
But
that's what makes
dancer.
It fun.
I saw somebody fall last night. I don't think that's part of the show.
Oh, no.
What?
But that's live theater. You know, things happen.
It's live theater, and she's a factory worker. Why wouldn't she fall?
Yeah. You know, and there Lola was to pick her up and keep
it
moving.
Yeah, I thought it was great. You talked about the director telling you that this is about telling a story. It's not about being a Broadway musical. And we talked a little bit about this before this show started, and that is the fact that I saw this in New York,
mm-hmm.
and I liked it. But this production seems to really focus on the story. I got a lot more out of this watching it last night than I did at the Hirschfeld in New York.
Mm.
And I'm not sure why that is, because it's the same director. It's the same script.
Yeah.
It's the same choreography. It just seems more focused to me.
Yeah, I think so. I can't speak for them, and they're all our best friends. And, you know, it could have been just your night there, too. But I think, you know, I was saying earlier, when you're on tour, you're just locked in the whole time. You're there for the 3 hours a day. You spend all day in a hotel or sightseeing, whatever you're doing. So you're there locked in. You're ready to go. And it might have just been your experience. But it's a great story. And I also think, going back, I think the timing is right for the show. I don't know if 10 years ago would work, and I don't know if 10 years from now would work.
Hmm.
I think the timing on this show and the message that we're portraying or saying is perfect.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a lot about this, because there are connections to this show and the theme of this show to this city. And not too long ago, where were you 3 weeks ago? That's my question. the movie Kinky Boots is based on the true story that was depicted in the BBC documentary. It's a British story. It's a British film. But this is an American musical with Cyndi Lauper, who wrote the music and lyrics, and Harvey Fierstein, who wrote the book for the show. There's a universality to this story on many different levels. How would you describe it?
It's definitely a story that I think everyone can relate to, in the sense that we all have those struggles in life of trying to be an individual, trying to be an adult in this world of chaos and confusion, and making choices that sometimes are outside of the realm of what is normalcy or what is found to be regular. And that fight and that struggle is a universal struggle, as in Charlie trying to save this factory and Lola fighting to have a boot that can withstand the weight of a full grown man. They have different struggles, and they find a way to help each other through their struggles. And then they also find within themselves that they have other things that connect them, their struggles with their fathers and those relationships. And I think everyone has some kind of struggle with their parents and trying to grow up.
And you play Lola, who is also called Simon in
yes.
the show. You play Don. You're on the other side of the coin here, and you were the first person on this panel to mention that this show has a message for people.
Yeah, I think it's about inclusion. I think overall it's about accepting others. Nobody chooses, that's hard to say. Nobody really chooses a lifestyle. Like, people like to dress one way, or people or sexual orientations are one way. They don't choose it. It's just who they are. Mm-hmm. And I think once you accept that and you realize that everybody's different for good, bad, or indifferent reasons, but they're still different than you, or we're still people. We're still the same.
We're going to explore that theme as we go through the hour here on Charlotte Talks with the leads from Kinky Boots. So a lot of people may be listening thinking, all right, I've got some of the particulars here, but what's this about? What is Kinky Boots about? Maybe they didn't see the film. I'd never seen the film when I saw the Broadway play. So what is it about, the show?
Kinky Boots is simply a shoe factory in Northampton, England, that is going out of business, and Charlie takes it on after his father passes away, and he runs into Lola on a trip to London, and they create this plan to design and make Kinky Boots to save the factory. And along the way, Lola has to fight against Don and get him to change his mind and get Charlie to understand that, like, hey, you know, I'm here to help you, and let's help each other and support each other and lift each other up, and let's just all be who we are, and the world will be a better place.
So how true is this story? Did the Kinky Boots aspect of this actually occur?
That's what I was told.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's the story. I think the movie, you know,
were they called Kinky Boots other than in the film and the play? Were they called Kinky Boots?
Yeah,
in real
I believe
life?
So.
Really?
Yeah, but you know, obviously the movie and the play takes on, you know, the ad stories to it. But there really was a Lola. I don't know if he was went by Lola or whoever, but there really was that. And it's also the other thing about where the story is based in Northampton, England. Price and Sons was a shoe factory that's been around for three generations, and they made the highest quality of men's shoes. Mm-hmm. And that part of the country does that. That's like what they're known for. It's like Pittsburgh's the Steel City or whatever. Mm-hmm. So what I love about it is I'm a big proponent of small family-run businesses. And this company was making shoes that were $700-$800 a pair, but they last you forever.
Right.
As opposed to these knockoff stores that make them, you buy them a year, but then you have to keep buying them. So the pressure, I think, for Charlie to really carry on that family tradition is great. And his father, which he didn't realize, is that to keep everybody employed, his father just kept on making these shoes, but he wasn't able to sell them.
The other thing about this show that I think is universal is that this guy, Charlie, who was the presumptive heir to this shoe factory,
right.
He didn't want to do this for a living. It was not his passion. It was not his dream. He didn't have a passion. He didn't have a dream.
Lost.
And he was sucked back into the factory because his father passed away. Right after he moved to London with his fiancée, he felt an obligation to go back. And then he found out how bad things were. And that's when he found his passion.
Right.
It's about family in many ways, because the factory workers become his family. It's very touching.
And they've always been his family because, as you see in the show, young Charlie has been a part of the factory and has been around and knows who these people are. And Don even says, you know, we went to high school together. We, you know, third generation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this factory has been his life. But he didn't want it to continue to be, but yes, that obligation he felt.
Jay Harrison G plays Lola, one of the leads in Kinky Boots. Joe Coots is Don, the nemesis to Lola. Kinky Boots runs through Sunday at the Belk, and then it comes back, I believe, this December. And there are still tickets available, not many, but if you can get one, get one, and then see it again in December. We'll come back and talk more about this in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Oh,
it's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We have the leads from Kinky Boots with us. And speaking of the boots, let's hear about them, shall we? The secret to these boots.
From London to
I guess that's it. I'm sitting here looking at a picture of a broken kinky boot. You broke the heel the other
day? I broke the heel. They say even Don can't break it. Well, Don broke it.
On stage?
Yeah.
Woo. We're talking, that's Joe Kutz, who plays Don, and Jay Harrison G's with us. He plays Lola in Kinky Boots through Sunday at the Belk Theater. When Harvey Fierstein brought Cyndi Lauper into this project to write the music for this show, he wanted somebody who could write club music like what we just heard, and also some Broadway songs, and they all want, both of them wanted to stress the universality of the father-son bond. Which is a big part of the show. It's a difficult bond for a lot of people. And in Kinky Boots, we see it through two very different sets of eyes. Charlie, who was the presumptive heir to the shoe factory fortune or misfortune, who didn't want any part of it, and Lola. Now, Charlie tried to walk away, as we said, from this four-generation shoe factory to follow his own dreams. Lola was simply different. You share something in common, Jay, with Lola. Is that correct?
Yes, I share many things in common with Lola.
And what might that be?
Well, I've been doing drag outside of the show for almost 5 years now. So I know that lifestyle of being a, you know, cabaret club performer, and the struggle I've had with my father as well.
Yeah.
Last week I was blessed with the opportunity to have my father come see the show in Durham. And we sat down before the show and had a wonderful conversation about life and drag and art, and cleared a lot of things up. And it was actually a wonderful conversation.
Now, I know that you had, where they held these auditions for this production in New York, there were several auditions going on, and you were there to audition for Motown the Musical.
Yes.
And somebody pulled you aside and suggested you might want to go over here and audition for this. I know that doing drag is not a prerequisite for getting into a show, but I certainly couldn't have hurt. Did it make you instantly more comfortable because you had experience in it?
Oh, absolutely.
A little glitter right below your eyes. It never comes off.
It never comes off. I was joking earlier today, and I say all the time, I was lucky to get the blush off this morning. It stained so much. But, definitely doing drag, you know, gave me a leg up and made me more comfortable in the audition process. Mm-hmm. It's been a blessing to be a part of it.
So you've been
he
doing...
is Lola.
Okay.
In real life, he is Lola.
So you've been doing this for 5 years.
Yes.
You're doing drag for five years. How did that start for you?
It actually started, I was in school at AMDA in New York. And
AMDA is?
The American Musical and Dramatic Academy. And we were auditioning scenes for a dramatic showcase. And our director wanted us to try this scene, and he wanted me to play a female wrestler. And at the time, RuPaul's Drag Race had just come out, and so I used it as a character study. And then I got obsessed and started watching and watching and watching, and I was like, well, what do I really look like in drag? And so I started exploring, and one thing led to another.
You know, you get into a tiny conversation about this in the show, about the difference between being transgendered and being a transvestite and being in drag. They're three very different things.
Very, yes.
What do you like about doing drag?
I enjoy the creative control I have of doing drag. If I want to be a brunette, if I want to be a blonde, if I want to be punk rock, if I want to be full glam, if I want to be whatever it is I feel like doing that day, I have the control to create this character and portray that in whatever manner I want.
And when you say doing that day, you have the ability to portray this character, are you talking about doing it on a stage, or are you talking about doing it in life?
No, on a stage. Usually if I'm in drag, I'm doing a gig somewhere and entertaining and performing. And that was something I had to stress to my father, that I do drag on my terms when I feel like it and how I desire.
You've actually said that doing drag has helped you to find yourself and your voice, not only as an artist, but as a human being.
Yes.
Explain that if you can.
It's allowed me to be a bolder person as Jay, and to not be afraid of the choices that I would normally make on an everyday basis. And it's funny to me, I'll make bold choices as Jay, and I'll see people staring or, you know, double taking. And it's fun to see people have opinions on the choices that I make. And having the drag background just makes it easier for me to be comfortable in those bold choices.
There is this lovely, haunting moment in this show.
Mm-hmm.
But it truly is breathtakingly lovely. Very little movement, and this is a show that's all about movement.
Mm-hmm.
Very little movement, and it takes place in the men's room.
Yes.
Of this factory. And it's a song about not being your father's son. And about Charlie joining you at the very end,
mm-hmm.
not being his father's son. Because living up to your father's ideal and his dreams for what you might be is something that I think almost every man on the planet has gone through. That's another thing
Absolutely.
That makes it so universal. You don't have to be a drag queen not to live up to your father's dreams for what he thinks you could be or even should be. But this brings into the fact that Lola says something that's breathtakingly tragic, and that is that her father cannot recognize the best part of who she is. And that's a song called Not My Father's Son. I want to play just a little bit of this, and then we're going to talk about your father, okay? Here we go.
When I was just a kid, everything I did was to be like him. Under my skin, my father always thought if I was strong and thought not like some albatross, I'd begin to fit in. Look at me, powerless and holding my breath, trying hard to repress what scared him to death. It was never easy to be his type of man. To breathe freely was not in his plan. And the best part of me is what he wouldn't see. I'm not my father's son. I'm not the image of what he dreamed of. With the strength of Sparta and the patience of Job, still couldn't be the one to echo what he'd done and mirror what was not in me.
When I hear that song, I remember the day I told my father I was going to be in broadcasting. Because we had spent lots of money and lots of time on making me a musician. And he had been a musician, and he wanted me to be a musician. And I just thought, I don't want to spend my life playing in Italian restaurants. So I'm going... I played the accordion. So I'm going into radio. And he didn't say anything negative. It just... I saw his face. And it was fear and disappointment and resignation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think anybody can relate to this. You're from Fayetteville, and your story was, I'm going to do drag, Dad. And your father, as you've said, well, your father is a missionary Baptist minister.
Yes.
Praise Jesus.
Yes.
Do tell.
Yes, and on top of that, he's he has a PhD in philosophy and psychology, and he... everything has been about education and church. His answer involved something about the Bible or education. And he actually didn't know that I was doing drag for years. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until recently that he learned this fact. And before then, the struggle was just him understanding me wanting to do theater. He didn't understand why I wanted to go to New York and why I didn't want a 4-year degree. And it's just like, well, it's something I've dealt with and it's something that I want to do. And I feel passionate about this.
You know, you grew up singing in the church, right?
Yes.
Aretha Franklin grew up singing in the church. Surely these preachers must know that if they have a superstar in the choir, they might want to do this professionally.
You know, but I kind of didn't commit to it until high school year, a senior year of high school. I committed to saying, well, I'm going to go do theater. Uh-huh. Because before then I was like, well, I'll make mom and dad happy. I'll go be a lawyer or I'll go do PR. Or I'll do something in education to make him happy.
You know, there was you don't come in the front door because you go in the stage door, which is on the other side of the theater and on the round the block. But last night in coming in the front door, there was a street preacher.
Mm.
I saw him
telling people to not go into the theater, turn away and don't come and see this because it wouldn't be a good thing for you to see.
Mm.
I know he didn't see it. I know he's never seen it. Mm-hmm. And I think he would be shocked at how good it is to see. But your father, how did he adjust to your telling him this is what I'm going to do? This is what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And how did he like the show? Because he came to see it in Durham last week,
yes.
Right?
He loved it.
Really?
He has not stopped texting and calling me and saying how much he enjoyed the show. I'm pretty sure he hasn't wiped the smile off his face yet. And he's said to many people, he said, there's mud on my face, but it smells good.
Yeah. Because the message is acceptance, as you said, Don. Don, Joe.
call me whatever,
okay,
Bill.
The message is acceptance, and that seems to be Christian to me.
Yes, absolutely.
I went up to his dad after opening. His dad is wearing his red jacket. I said, man, nice red jacket. He goes, no, it's burgundy. Red.
Yeah. He laid out a couple options. He said, what should I wear to the show? I said, wear that one. We'll have a reference that you'll enjoy.
It was so funny.
So he liked the show.
Yes, he loved it.
It seems to me that you have the best of all worlds.
Yes, absolutely.
Not only are you talented, you're a great singer and
a great actor,
but you're a good-looking guy.
Thank you.
And you are a beautiful woman. I got to tell you.
And my mother said, she said, I didn't know I was so pretty until I saw him made up like that. I was like, Mom, I've been telling you I look like you in drag all these years.
Lola goes on to sing in that song that although perhaps he went to extremes in trying to find himself, the world seemed brighter 6 inches off the ground, alluding to the heels.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it feels like?
It does. This might be a bit much, but I often joke and say there is no stronger feeling than using the restroom in a pair of heels. Like there's no more powerful stance that you could have.
You mean the men's room?
Yeah, being in the men's room in a pair of heels, you're just like, oh, I'm in control of everything. It's no better feeling.
Because you're up there. Because you're a tall guy to begin
with. Yeah, I'm 6'4", out of heels.
Out of heels. Yeah, you're tall. You wear heels in the show.
Yes.
You tell me what it feels like.
They suck.
we're talking to the leads of Kinky Boots, which plays through Sunday at the Belk Theater here this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. You get around in them just fine.
Yeah, well, all my dance training, years and years of dancing, no. I don't care what Jay says. They're not made for men. They hurt bad. And I only have to wear them for the last 8 minutes. These guys are running around for 2.5 hours.
I think they hurt women too, but the women, they make them look good. So
yeah, they'll never admit it. Determined
to wear them.
Beauty is pain.
Where does it hurt? Yes. Where does it hurt the most? In the toes or in the heel?
Actually, for me,
the calf muscles?
My lower back.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why. I don't know about y'all, but
you're carrying a lot of weight around.
Well, yeah, you know. Call me husky.
It's muscle. It's muscle.
Yeah,
it's all
big
muscle.
Boned.
Cyndi Lauper has said that for some reason she identifies with drag queens. And you have said, I think, Jay, that it's hard to believe Cyndi didn't know your story with some of the choices for the words in the songs that you have to sing. And you also said it would be interesting when your father saw the show for the first time. What are the words that connect with you in those.
And not my father's son. When the simple line of with the strength of Sparta and the patience of Job, the fact that my dad has a degree in history and philosophy, and I've grown up in the church, and like that sentence for some reason just resonates with me. And immediately I can't not think of my father. And it's very cathartic, that moment last week to do Not My Father's Son in front of my father.
Had he seen you do drag?
No.
Never?
Never.
So
until a day before the show, he had never seen a picture of me in drag outside of...
So this was a good introduction.
Absolutely.
What was his reaction to Not My Father's Son? His reaction?
It's funny because he told me my mother watched him during the song. So I think he tried not to respond because she was like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? But he just, you know, gave me a sensible nod and he understood and got it.
And what was it for you? What was it like for you to know your father had never seen you do drag and you're singing this song, which is about a father not being able to accept his son for what he is? What was it like for you to sing that in front of him? Did you think about it?
Oh, I definitely thought about it. But like I said, the conversation we had had the day prior made that moment so much easier. And he texted me when he returned home the next day. And the last sentence of his text message was, I am proud of what and who you are.
Wow. Jay Harrison G plays Lola. Joe Coots plays Don in Kinky Boots. We'll come back in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
You've got to take what you've got, even when your life is in knots. You take aim, take your shot. Sometimes you've got to rewrite the plot. You've got to take what you've got.
You'd always say that one of these days you'd get out of Northampton town.
You'd always say that you wouldn't stay now.
You got to take what you got from Kinky Boots, which plays through Sunday at the Belk Theater. Jay Harrison G is with us. That's J, the letter J, and G is G-H-E-E. He plays Lola and Simon in the show. Joe Coots is Don, who is his nemesis for a good part of the show. Cyndi Lauper was at rehearsals for The Road Company.
She was there all the time.
Why?
She's bored. No, she really believes in the show, and it's obviously her big first Broadway hit. Only Broadway hit. Mm-hmm. And so she just wanted to be there and take care of it and look after it. And she's really, you know, everybody, it's Cyndi Lauper. Cyndi Lauper has a lot of people like, oh, the girls just want to have fun, that crazy 80s, 90s iconic figure. But she's actually extremely smart. She works really, really hard. She cares more than you would ever could imagine. And she wants to be there and look after her baby and help us out.
And does she look like Cyndi Lauper looks when Cyndi Lauper performs?
No.
So she's
like a lunch lady. She'll come in with a little net on her hair and, you know, just sits in the corner in a nice little sweater.
And she wrote the music, so she has a vested interest in it.
Literally, I sang probably five lines in the whole show. That's all I ever sang.
Right.
She took me into a studio and worked with me for 45 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
On
on my five lines.
To accomplish what?
Well, I asked her. She always talks about singing in the pocket. She's like, got to be in the pocket.
Meaning in the pitch, in the groove?
No, in the groove.
In the groove, yeah.
So I asked her. Now, I was kind of a loaded question because I had about a 30-minute break in rehearsal. I'm like, I'm going to talk to Cyndi. So I go, Cyndi, what's in the pocket mean? She goes, come with me. So we go into a room. We literally sat there for probably a half hour, 35 minutes, just all about In the Pocket. And it was great. I had my own personal musical lesson with Cyndi Lauper.
So explain it to me.
She was just like, it's the groove. You just got to feel it. It's all in the rhythm. She goes, you know, it's like it's in your backside. She goes, feel it in your butt, you know. And so then we went in there and we did it. And she's like, and Joe, oh, my God, he was great. Did you see that? And she was taking credit for helping me.
And Harvey, what did he tell you, Harvey Fierstein?
Harvey's a man of simple words. Harvey just came up to me and opening night. He's like, you're doing a great job. He goes, you should be proud. Now just stay out there and make me cash.
You have said... You said that at the core of this show, it's all about inclusion, acceptance, and being who we want to be. But in the role of Don, you stand in for a lot of people who don't buy into that idea,
exactly.
Who don't really understand or like or approve of people like Lola. Live performers can feel the audience.
Oh, yeah.
What do you feel when that idea is espoused?
I feel them change. You know, I always got the show from the beginning, but I really got it when we were in San Francisco, when a guy came up to me on the street, married, two kids, and he was bawling. And he grabbed me on my shoulder, and I turned around. I was like, I didn't know exactly what was going on. And he hugged me, and he's like, you just made me change the way I think about life. And then I was like, and I always knew I had a strong responsibility and a big goal to accomplish. But that moment there, I realized, all right, this is it.
Both of you have said that this show is in the pocket. It's in a magic moment in time. It's in a moment in time in the country where this discussion is happening, because we're having these big debates over gay marriage and LGBT rights. And here in Charlotte, just two or three weeks ago, we had a debate at the city council level over a proposed ordinance that would have given LGBT folks rights in public places. And that was the whole thing was kind of torpedoed over a side issue because of fears over restroom usage by transgendered people. Which room would they use? Which room should they use? And fears that arise from that. And that song that we heard earlier in this program about Not My Father's Son, ironically, takes place in the men's room. Now, Simon is dressed as a man at that time, but it takes place in a restroom. Do you think you can have your mind open by seeing a show like this? I think so.
Oh, absolutely.
Just gave me an example of one person in San Francisco.
You'll see men and women sitting in the front row, right? Yeah. And so they're a date, husband, wife, whatever. Beginning of the show, the guy is just kind of like this. Oh, my wife dragged me to the theater. What am I doing? By the end of it, he's on his feet screaming and going nuts like everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you remember that song that he sings, it's set up by the line I have right before that where I go... he goes, is there a restroom here? And I go, sorry, love, I'm afraid all we have is men's or women's. And that's what sets up that line or that song, and that's why it's all done in the bathroom.
And then Lauren runs and says, you know, Charlie, come down. Lola's locked herself in the loo. And he's like, well, I'm not going in the women's room. You go get her to come out. And she's like, no, he's in the men's rooms. And he's like, of course, he is.
Yeah.
It's very
funny you had that debate 3 weeks ago because it's so poignant for the show.
Well, have you run into this problem? Of course, when you're in drag in a theater setting or in a club setting, so and you're probably using the backstage restrooms, but
usually. And then there are those moments where you're in a club and you're like, well, I'm in drag, but I am a boy, and which would be more comfortable for the patrons? You know, if I were to walk into the men's, would the men care? The women clearly usually don't care, but you're like, and I'm, you know,
But drag your 6'7".
And in the show, the women factory workers seem to be a lot more accepting of Lola because she understands them. She gets it.
But there's still one, Trish. Yeah. Trish is a little like, I'm on Don's team. Who's this sparkle fairy?
She has a huge crush on Don, and I don't blame her.
And Don, although you're the kind of ringleader of the opposition, you have a lot of support in the opposition there. But what is it that tips you over the edge? What is it about what happens in this environment?
Well, Lola challenges Don to accept somebody for who they are. But what a lot of people don't get right away, they all think that Lola's trying to have Don accept Lola. Mm-hmm. Don's not. that challenge from Lola is to accept Charlie, because Charlie has to, Don has to accept Charlie for who he is in order to save this factory. So as soon as Charlie, or Don witnesses Charlie talking to Nicola about, we're doing it for them, these people we grew up with, Don then rushes to the pub, gets everybody together, and we come back and mm-hmm. see the factory.
There's a lot of music in here that deals with, or a lot of themes in this play that deal, again, with this father-son relationship, which I think can be extrapolated out to society at large, people who are other with the mainstream population. I want to hear a bit of a song that Simon sings as Lola in a nursing home where his father is in residence.
Listens to his father. You don't want to see me anymore. You can't listen to me laugh out loud. You don't wanna see me dance. You can't even take the chance that it might reflect on you.
Lola singing in a nursing home to her father. It's a very interesting, touching moment, spectacular moment in the show. It's one of the more spectacular moments in the show because of the way it's staged and lit. Prior to doing Lola in the show, you were a swing, and people don't understand this, but you played a lot of different roles.
Yes,
in the
pretty
show.
Much anyone, any guy on stage, I covered.
Yeah.
All the factory workers, all the angels.
How do you keep all that in your head? That's mind-boggling. Seriously. It's not just the lines and the songs. It's the steps. It's where you have to be on the stage.
Blocking,
and with
yeah.
all the stuff that's going on around you, you could be killed if you didn't know where you were going.
Absolutely. I always say my brain luckily works that way. If I watch something long enough, I will learn someone else's part innately. And now I say they just pay me to learn people's parts.
How old are you?
25.
That'll stop.
It will.
That'll stop.
Then I'll just start writing more stuff down.
Exactly right. And then you'll forget where you put it. Now, your path to show business, particularly musical theater, is a really interesting one.
Yeah.
Because you're a jock.
Yeah.
You're a football player.
Yeah.
And then you played in college, right?
Right.
And then you went on to work in athletic departments at college. You were William & Mary, is that right?
College of William & Mary, then Northern Illinois.
How did this happen?
Well, to tell you the truth, I was a freshman in college, and I needed a summer job, so the coach sent me over to the theater department to build sets, just as building sets for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw these pretty girls running around, and I realized I was one of the only few straight guys over there. So I'm like, well, this looks like fun when you're 18. So I did a little bit in college, and then I got out of college, and, you know, I got my degree in criminal justice. I started coaching for a year, and then I worked at my alma mater in development, and then I got the job at William & Mary's assistant athletic director for development, raising money for the Tribe Club. And then I got the assistant AD job at Northern Illinois, and I was doing a show just, you know, for fun over the summer. And this guy, Jeffrey Loden, who wrote the show, he lives in New York, he came up to me, and he's like, you're big, you can act, you can sing. He goes, you're a guy's guy. There's not a lot of people out in New York like you. And I was, you know, young enough at the time, so I literally resigned from my job, packed up my car, drove to New York, started bouncing at a bar in Bleecker Street, and fast forward 10 years later, and here I am.
When you look back on that decision, that moment in time, when there are no guarantees.
Zero.
What do you think? Were you crazy or were you
it was a risk, but it was a calculated risk. But I truly believe this, and I say this all the time, but I really believe it. 10 years later, if I was still bouncing at that bar in Bleecker Street today, I would be satisfied because I tried it and I gave it all my all. And I really believe that luck only happens when opportunity meets hard work. So I busted. I'm proud of everything I've done because I've worked my tail off for it.
Joe Coots plays Don in Kinky Boots through Sunday at the Belk. We're talking about that today on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. But aside from being in a couple college plays and and building sets, did you have a lot of dance training? Did you have a lot of vocal training?
None.
Acting training?
None.
What made you think that you could, seriously, that you could not, you know, it's not rocket science.
I know.
But there are people now in New York, if this were 1970, Yeah. Because the talent today is so much better and so more trained than they were back then. What made you think that you could go to New York and compete with people who had a lifetime of training?
I'm just competitive. I knew that if whatever situation I got into, I'd work really hard at it. And, you know, I'd look at a script and every TV show I do, I just look at it and I just say, how would this person actually say it? And then I go over it four or five times and I seem to always get it.
And you've kind of moved to Los Angeles.
Yeah, I've been in Los Angeles the last year and a half, 2 years.
Do you like television better than stage?
I do. Well, yes and no. I mean, I like doing stage shows because you got 3,000 people and you feed off them, you feel it, and it's energized, and every show is different. Mm-hmm. What I like about the stage is if you have one show the next night, maybe you screw up or you don't, you got another night to fix it. When you're on television, you got maybe four or five takes of each scene, and it's that way set print for life.
Yes.
So you never get a shot to really do it again. But that doesn't bother. I like them both. I like the paychecks from television, that's for sure. You know, it's
you don't work a lot, but when the money comes in, it comes in.
Yeah.
I think this is my little dirty secret. I think that the best acting on television is in soap operas.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they do it.
A friend of mine did it. I don't know how he does it either.
You must consume your entire life.
They'll shoot two or three episodes in a week.
Yes.
So he'll get home at night, 7 o'clock, get the sides from the line producer and have to sit there till midnight, memorize them, and go in the next day. And they always get like one, maybe two takes per shot. That's
right. Yeah, because if you can't do it in one or two takes, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Because they have no time.
That's why I don't do soap operas.
They have no time to mess around. It's an amazing talent. And you went to New York with some training and got more training when you were there. And where do you go from here, do you think, after this show's over?
I'm like Joe. I'd be willing to do anything. If one day if television happens, I'd be more than happy to do it. But, you know, we'll see what the road brings.
That's the key in being a professional actor. You have to be open to what the road brings because, man, it is an iffy thing.
Yeah, this gypsy lifestyle.
Hats off to you. Jay Harrison G, who plays Lola, Joe Coots, who plays Don in Kinky Boots, at the Belk through Sunday. It's a delightful show. You'll love it. Thanks for the hour.
Thank you.